This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you for being with us today as we spend our day digesting the news that Robert Mueller and his special counsel investigation has filed charges against former campaign officials working for President Donald Trump. President Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has turned himself in to the FBI today. Manafort and his former business associate, Rick Gates, have been charged each 12 counts, mostly financial-related charges, ranging from conspiracy against the United States to acting as an unregistered foreign agent and more. The charges come 5 months into special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into possible connections between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. But it was also revealed today that George Papadopoulos, one of President Trump's more junior foreign policy advisors early on in the campaign, pled guilty to lying to the FBI about a contact with a Russian professor with ties to the Kremlin earlier this month. After Manafort surrendered himself to the authorities, the president took to Twitter. He said, "Sorry, but this is years ago, before Manafort was part of the Trump campaign. But why aren't crooked Hillary and the Dems the focus?" Also, the president said, "There is no collusion." We want to get some analysis now from an expert into charges like this and what this could mean for the ongoing investigation from Robert Mueller. Jennifer Rogers is executive director of the Center for Advancement of Public Integrity from Columbia Law School and a former federal prosecutor herself. Jennifer, thanks for joining us again here on The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer, you have prosecuted money laundering cases and foreign agent cases similar to what appear to be in the charges here. A conspiracy against the U.S., conspiracy to launder money, acting as an unregistered foreign agent, making false statements. So help us out here, Jennifer. When you look at the scope of the charges here against Paul Manafort and, of course, Rick Gates, what do you see?
Well, I see a long-standing scheme to make a bunch of money under the table, much of it, bring it into the U.S. and spend it without paying taxes on it, of course, without letting the U.S. know about either the work that they were doing or the money that they were making, and of course, you know, not registering as a foreign agent for the work that they were doing here in the U.S. as well on behalf of Russia-friendly Ukrainian groups.
So most of these charges are financial related. The president makes the point, which appears to be true, this all happened well before the Trump campaign even existed. So the allegations of lawbreaking here are not the same thing as the political ramifications or the fallout.
Well, it's certainly true that factually this is a different set of facts than the Trump campaign colluding with Russians to interfere in the election. It's not entirely true that it's all ancient history. The charges go up through 2016. So it's not that it was so long ago. It's just that factually it's separate from collusion with the Russians in connection with the investigation.
So does this give us any sense from the prosecutor's point of view where Mueller's investigation is at or where it may be headed?
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, before the more recent charges came out against Papadopoulos, I would say, you know, he's focused on Manafort and Gates as more potential cooperators. I mean, these are very hefty charges. These are serious charges. They carry a lot of time. So even though they're not directly related to the collusion case, it puts a lot of pressure on Manafort and on Gates to cooperate and tell what they know about the Russian interference. Now that we also have the Papadopoulos charges, now we're looking more at kind of direct charges against someone who was involved in ties between the campaign and the Russians.
So what are prosecutors likely doing here? You mentioned putting pressure on Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, and others to tell what they know. Is it likely that Mueller wants Paul Manafort and Gates in jail or wants to use them to get to other people?
I think the latter. You know, if this is as far as the charges go, then they'll be, you know, presumably convicted if the evidence is strong enough and sentenced. But what he really wants is to learn everything there is to learn. And that involves flipping people who know things. And this is how you do it. You bring leverage against them by bringing hefty charges. And then if it's in their best interest to cooperate, which I think it is, given the scope of these charges, then when they come in and tell all they know, then that may lead to charges against other people.
It's been said in the press and by many analysts, prosecutors like you, Jennifer, that special counsels and the FBI don't go after individuals. They go after operations, schemes, or institutions.
It depends. I mean, they go after individuals, too, certainly, depending on the conduct. It's also true, though, that we know that these allegations against Manafort and this investigation by the FBI had been ongoing for some time and had laid dormant for some time. So I think that kind of goes to your point. They kind of knew about some of this. They had investigated some of this. It didn't really, you know, it wasn't really in their interest to pursue it vigorously and bring it to a conclusion until now, when they think that Manafort knows a lot about this other investigation that they're pursuing. So now is the time they bring these charges against Manafort and Gates. We'll see if they're willing to come in. We'll see what they know, and then they'll pursue whatever comes of that.
Of course, the fact that these charges and these men are in the orbit of the President of the United States has political ramifications, certainly, but also potential legal ones, Jennifer. How does somebody like Paul Manafort try to gauge whether he might be ripe for a pardon from the president? I mean, if prosecutors are leaning on him to tell what he knows in exchange for lenient treatment, he might not want to play that card and say, well, I have a pardon in my future, so I don't have to tell you anything.
That's a very interesting question. It's something that basically has never come up before. I mean, we've never had a scenario in which the president essentially is being investigated and there's this threat kind of overriding everything that he may just start preemptively pardoning people and thwarting the investigation that way. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I've read a legal analysis that he can do that. He can preemptively pardon people. Then, you know, you might see some state attorneys general picking up with it and seeing if there are charges that they can bring. You know, certainly there were crimes committed here that might be state crimes in addition to federal crimes. So, you know, we're kind of in uncharted territory. We'll have to see what happens here. I still think what's hanging over Manafort's head is really, really serious charges with a lot of jail time attached. So, you know, and we of course know the president has been distancing himself from Manafort as well. So relying on that potential pardon is pretty risky for Manafort right now. So we'll just have to see what he decides to do.
And let's talk about George Papadopoulos, who was a relatively low-level foreign policy aide to President Trump in the campaign. Papadopoulos has acknowledged, pled guilty to lying to the FBI, and the substance of that lie appears to be having met with a Russian professor with ties to the Kremlin who was offering dirt on Hillary Clinton during the campaign. How important is that fact from the prosecutor's point of view?
I think it's kind of medium important. You know, it depends on what else he knows, of course. He's obviously cooperating with authorities. So, you know, presumably there are things that he knows that do not appear in the public documents. The other thing is, of course, as a political matter, the Trump campaign and Trump has said all along, oh, we didn't seek dirt. You know, we didn't meet with any Russians. We were not trying to do that. And this, of course, exposes that, you know, that actually wasn't true, that at least some elements of the campaign were actively trying to meet with Russians and trying to get that dirt. So, you know, we know some things, but it doesn't appear to be a blockbuster unless Papadopoulos knows a lot. And given his level, it doesn't seem likely to me that he would know as much as a higher level official would, like a Manafort.
And those higher level officials, Paul Manafort and possibly others, may come into this story before it's over, Jennifer. Can you talk a little bit about what it might be like for Robert Mueller and his team to prosecute a case like this that is so imbued with politics? I mean, this is not like prosecuting some local racketeer and throwing him in jail or getting him to flip. There are undeniable political ramifications, national political ramifications. It's a scandal, not to mention the president's power to pardon under the Constitution. This is not your average prosecution.
That is certainly true. I think it's a great deal of pressure. I think they're probably just trying to keep their heads down and do the investigative work and do the prosecution work and not get caught up in all of those ramifications. But, you know, you can't even walk down the street or you know, turn on the news without hearing about it. So it does bring a lot of pressure to them. I just hope they can kind of continue to work and be productive, notwithstanding that pressure. And of course, it goes without saying that all of the decisions and judgments they make should be made without any kind of political thoughts whatsoever, which of course is why Mueller was chosen in the first place, given his reputation and his history.
And the politics are for everyone else, and certainly will be. I can guarantee that before it's over. Jennifer, what about the possible broad scope of charges here? And I know you can't speculate on who else might be charged because we just don't know that. But in terms of how big investigations like this work, is it likely that Robert Mueller and his team got charges together on three people and rolled them out right away? Or that this is part of a strategy that's a rolling series of indictments that could touch other people who were subject to the investigation? What's the strategy here?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly what they're doing. The charges against Manafort and Gates seem to be fairly cabined to them. I don't know that there are other people in the Trump orbit who had anything factually to do with these allegations. I think the Papadopoulos charges are more interesting because you're talking about other campaign officials who were involved in that, so we might see some more charges there. We have Michael Flynn sitting out there, of course, with fairly straightforward charges likely available on him. I think they're just trying to say, listen, we're serious, we're productive, we are working. They put these people out there, three of them, one of whom is already cooperating, two of whom they certainly would like to speak to. And it's just kind of ratcheting up the pressure on everyone involved in this. If they're not speaking to law enforcement already, they should be. That's kind of part of the message they're trying to say, that we're working, we're doing it, come in and talk to us, we got to get this thing going.
Jennifer, so much of the focus in this investigation, of course, has been on collusion with the Russians in the campaign. It's the sexiest part of this entire investigation, but it's really only one narrow piece of the possibilities here. We've pointed that out on the show. And also that many aspects of what we think of as possible collusion aren't really illegal, just troubling ethically, certainly politically in this country. Can you put that in context of what we already know about the charges against Manafort and how this case plays out in the political sphere? Because it will.
Well, so you kind of hit the nail on the head. You kind of have the legal side and then the political side, which isn't necessarily illegal. So what Manafort and Gates were doing with all of this money and their failure to register is illegal activity. And certainly there is potential illegal activity in the collusion piece as well, if there were, you know, hacking, that sort of thing going on. But then there's this whole other political side. I mean, the collecting of Oppo research, that sort of thing, which isn't illegal, but is ethically questionable. So, you know, lawyers can only charge what is against the law. So that's, of course, what Mueller and his team are doing. But they've also charged, pursuant to the statute that established his office, to write a report on this investigation. So the report will contain information that doesn't all necessarily go to actual illegal activity, but provides, hopefully, a complete narrative, or as complete as it can be, of the facts of what happened here and what they learned in their investigation, which should kind of contain both pieces of the puzzle, at least as far as they can establish them. So, you know, there's interplay there, but at the end of the day, the prosecutors can't and won't charge anything that isn't technically illegal, and so that's what they're looking to tease out where they can find it.
The president have reason to worry?
Of course, every day, and we're seeing it on Twitter.
Jennifer Rogers, Columbia Law School and former federal prosecutor.
Thank you.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Let's stay with the indictments from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation today. The indictment against Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, and his former business associate, Rick Gates, includes reference to tens of millions of dollars the two men allegedly received as unregistered foreign agents for Ukraine that they then funneled through offshore accounts in Cyprus, which they then allegedly used to buy property around New York City. Well, back in March, WNYC published an investigation into Paul Manafort's real estate dealings in New York. Here to help us explain how it's all connected is Andrea Bernstein, senior editor for WNYC. Andrea, great to have you.
Hey, great to be back.
Well, you've spent a lot of time investigating some of the real estate deals in New York that seem to be connected to at least some of the charges against Paul Manafort and Rick Gates today. Explain what you know.
So let me just go back to March and describe these properties. One of them is a brownstone, a townhouse in a low-rise area of Brooklyn. Not fancy. We're not talking about a Manhattan skyscraper. And we noticed that Manafort had taken a almost $7 million loan on that house. It followed a pattern where he had bought homes using shell companies, then many years later transferred them from the shell company into his name and took out a loan. They were also purchased initially with all cash, without a loan. So we thought, that's weird. What could that mean? Especially because the amounts of money that he was borrowing against these homes was so large. So we began to talk to a number of experts. We spoke to 9 in total who said to us, that could be money laundering. And today, that is apparently what the special counsel believes, that in fact, these were central to a scheme to get money from that Paul Manafort and his business partner had been making from the Ukrainian dictator, a Putin ally, that he had been making money from this party called the Party of Regions in the Ukraine, and not declaring it to U.S. government officials, not declaring it as income, instead routing it through bank accounts in Cyprus and then into a Brooklyn brownstone and an apartment in Soho in Lower Manhattan in New York City. And
how do you know that these are the properties that are the source of the money laundering charges that are in today's indictment?
Well, they're named in the indictment, these very properties, and these LLCs, MC Soho and MC Brooklyn was the name of them. There's a third LLC that we looked at, interestingly, called John Hanna LLC, which is the name of a shell company that Manafort used to purchase his apartment in Trump Tower in 2006. The indictment doesn't spell out specifically how that LLC is involved in all this, but it does talk about the Brooklyn real estate, the Soho real estate. And not only that, apparently in Soho, Manafort was renting it out on Airbnb. And he got a charge for that, too, because he's accused of lying about the fact that it wasn't his primary residence.
So we should point out, because you mentioned something that will be of interest to listeners, that Paul Manafort had also used a shell company, John Hanna LLC, to purchase a property in Trump Tower, but that purchase is not included in any of the charges today.
Right. It's the LLC is named as one of the businesses and companies that Manafort and Gates used to get this money out of the Ukraine and into the U.S. without paying taxes on it. But it's not spelled out how. Interestingly, a little side note here, John Hanna LLC is named after the middle names of Paul Manafort and another business partner, not named today, but his name is Rick Hanna Davis. So that is how the name John Hanna LLC came about. And we spent a month puzzling that over, and we felt like that was interesting because at the time those two men were doing business. It had come out both with the Ukrainians, but also with a Russian oligarch.
Well, Andrea, we've also heard that state officials in the state of New York are investigating. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman looking into these deals and other aspects of financial dealings of Trump associates in New York City. What's going on in those investigations? How is it different from what you're reporting on today?
Well, it's not clear to us that they are entirely separate. However, the point has been made by some legal analysts that state charges would not be subject to presidential pardon. So that's in the realm of legal theory, which we haven't been looking at. But I think what is so interesting is that these New York properties, which we found just by looking at New York land records and really digging into them, were a central way that Manafort was accused of getting this money into the U.S. to pay for things, including a lavish luxury lifestyle. And the charges are also that he ran money through an Alexandria drug dealer, a contractor in the Hamptons, which is a very Tony beach resort area out on Long Island, and that he was getting money in this way. And I think it's worth noting that when Manafort began to take money out of these properties as a loan, which was sort of the next piece of it, the money comes in, it sits in the property, and then he starts loaning money. And that's how he sort of, the allegation is, turns dirty money into clean money, because once it's a loan, it comes from a bank and it's good. That money came very close to the tenure of Manafort at the Trump campaign and coincided almost exactly with the period in time of the Trump campaign itself. So I know the president this morning tweeted that this happened long before him, but in fact, Paul Manafort was reaping the benefits of this during the time that Trump was running for president, some of it while he was Trump's campaign manager.
Andrea Bernstein at WNYC and the team at our home station, WNYC, has been doing the reporting on some of the property purchases that are behind allegations from Robert Mueller of money laundering by Rick Gates and former campaign manager Paul Manafort. Andrea Bernstein, it's great to have you doing that reporting, and it's great to have you joining us to break it all down.
Thanks so much. Always great to talk to you.
And we've been hearing from you on this breaking news all day. What do you make of Mueller's investigation and this first round of charges? Jennifer says on Facebook, "I love our country. Laws prevail." Well, we'll see what the law has to say about these indictments and the charges that are inside them. You can call us anytime at 877-8-MY-TAKE to weigh in. That number again, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or find us on Facebook where you can join the discussion. Always, we'll be following this story all day long, so you can also follow me and reach me on Twitter. I'm at Todd Zwillick.